Calling all podcasters, musicians, vloggers, and reporters, and everyone else who wants crystal clear recording that's super portable. The Shure Motive family of microphones makes studio quality audio that's as simple as plug and play. Many of the world's top podcasters rely on Shure, and with a Motive line of iOS and USB microphones, portability is now your friend. Imagine being able to get great audio quickly and easily from your phone, tablet, or computer. Simply visit Shure.com/motive to start getting great audio for your content now. That's Shure.com/MOTIV.
Blog Talk Radio.
And I got the HD blues, and my life feels kind of rough. Baby, I won't ever, ever give up. You might see me moving.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Hope for HD Live. Hope for HD Live is made possible by Hope for HD International and is supported by an education grant from Teva Pharmaceuticals and the Griffin Foundation. I'm your host, Katie Jackson, and today our guest is Dr. Amy Rose. Dr. Amy Rose is an assistant professor in the Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders at Western Carolina University. She received her doctorate from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro and has over 25 years of clinical experience serving children and adults with communication disorders. Dr. Rose currently teaches both undergraduates and graduate students with courses of dysphagia, voice disorder, genetics, and adult language disorders. Research projects include the development of friendships and social skills in disability populations and international service learning and collaboration in developing countries. Very cool. She just got back from Botswana, Africa, which I want to hear a little bit about that on the air too, because I think that's amazing. So we are so excited. This is a very, very important subject that we need to talk about as a community. So we're very excited to have Amy on the show with us. So thank you so much and welcome to the show, Amy.
Thanks, Katie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's start out and tell us a little bit about your connection with Huntington's disease.
Okay, so both my father and my grandmother had Huntington's disease. They have both since passed away. And then probably my closest connection is my brother. He's an older brother, and he has Huntington's disease currently, struggling through. And then my niece, Lauren, has tested positive for the gene but does not currently have symptoms. So lots of family members.
Yeah, and Lauren is such an amazing, we're lucky to have her as part of Help for HD, but she's such an amazing advocate. I think she's incredible. Yes.
Yeah.
So how can speech therapy help a patient with Huntington's disease?
Right, so a lot of people don't know what speech therapists do, and a lot of people think speech therapy just works on speech. So that part where it might be difficult to understand someone. In Huntington's disease, we typically think of that with, I'm going to throw out a word here, but hyperkinetic dysarthria. That's a big word for just saying there's some involuntary movement, just like other movements in Huntington's, but you also get that with speech or with the jaw or tongue. But we do a lot more in addition to that. So speech therapists or speech language pathologists really have a broad, broad scope of practice. And so we work on anything related to communication. So that might be receptive language or understanding what someone says. So helping someone with comprehension. Those would be things like if your loved one is having difficulty following directions, or if you're telling them lots of things at one time and they're only getting us part of that. So we help with that understanding or comprehension. We also help patients with expressive communication. So that's being able to say what you want, right? So some of that frustration that we see in patients come out because they can't get out what they want to say, that's that expressive language, communicating, you know, even just basic wants and needs. And we also work, this is a lot, so I'm running through them, but we also work on pragmatic language or social language skills. You know, when you kind of think of quality of life and how important it is to be able to socialize. And sometimes patients with Huntington's disease get that impulsivity where they can't always control what they're saying. They might get a thought and then it just comes out, or they get frustrated with not being able to communicate. And so those things can impact the, you know, that ability to socialize with others. Let's see, what else do we do? We also, this seems really unrelated, but speech pathologists are responsible in our scope of practice to work on swallowing. So, you know, which we see a lot in patients with Huntington's disease, that difficulty with being able to swallow safely. And so we oversee swallow studies and help develop programs or therapies to help a patient swallow safely. What else do we do? There's even more. We work on cognitive skills so that, you know, sequencing. So if there are like steps to a task, the patient may be able to remember one or two, but are having difficulty with, you know, with multiple steps. And so attention and short-term memory. So actually speech pathologists help with those skills too. If a person starts to lose their ability to communicate through voice, we also work on something called augmentative or alternative communications, which is just an alternative way for someone to be able to communicate, maybe through a device or picture symbols or things like that. So it's pretty broad.
Right. And I think the choking is so important for our community because it's so scary for the loved one and for the caregiver, or for the caregiver and our loved ones. And so I know that my husband, when he did speech therapy, they really helped with showing me what he could eat.
Yes.
I didn't realize, you know, that, or and how to eat as well.
That's right. And you start to see changes, right, with swallowing gradually over time. And so, and it is scary that, you know, someone choking on their food, and because you start to get a difference in that coordination of breathing and swallowing. Those things really work together. And so as soon as that starts to get affected, you know, you're at risk for pneumonia, right, for food going down the wrong way. And that's really what we're trying to prevent, you know, or preventing those pneumonias for occurring. So, right, we may help with a modified diet, softer foods or thicker liquids.
Yep. Right. Yeah. So when is the best time to seek out help from a speech therapist?
Yeah, so really it can be, there's not a set time. It's really when you or your loved ones start to notice any difficulty with swallowing. So, you know, any difficulty, like if there's an episode of pneumonia, if you notice that your loved one is starting to cough a lot during meals, you know, that's really a red flag. Difficulty swallowing medication is another red flag where you might want to go ahead and ask for a swallow study. And once you have a swallow study, a speech therapist then gets involved with helping with strategies to help with safe swallowing. The other time is anytime that you start to notice a significant change in communication or cognitive skills, you can always ask for a speech therapist help. And it may not be that a speech therapist is involved, you know, from day one of a diagnosis, from when Huntington's symptoms begin, but just at critical moments throughout the journey, you know, to help at different times to maintain quality of life.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. What is a swallow study?
Okay.
Can you go and tell us kind of what that entails?
Yeah. So a swallow study is, there are a couple different ways to do it. Sometimes you go into, you know, hospital, it's like a little outpatient study through what's called a modified barium swallow study. It's kind of like an x-ray while you're eating. So you have a machine that's, you know, that's watching the swallow. just like an x-ray would look at your bones and muscles and things like that. You can actually see what's happening during the swallow, but they put barium in the food or their liquid so that you can see it going down and you can see what's happening from chewing in the mouth to when the person goes to swallow. How's the timing of that? Does the food go where it's supposed to go, right? You don't want it to go into the lungs. That's what you're really trying to prevent. So you can actually see that on the swallow study to make sure that it's going the right way and that all of those structures are working just like they're supposed to. So that's called a modified barium swallow study. Another kind is, which people may be familiar with, is called FEES, which is a fiber optic endoscopic evaluation of swallowing. And with that one, you don't have to have an x-ray or anything. They actually put a little endoscope through the nose, and then it goes down the back of the throat, and then it looks, it's able, it kind of sits above so it can watch what happens with the food when you swallow. And so they put a little bit of dye in the food, and you can try different, you know, different thicknesses of liquid, different types of food, and actually see what's happening to make sure that, again, same thing you're looking for is to make sure that all of those muscles and structures are doing what they're supposed to do. So either one of those works well. Yeah. Both of those are considered swallow studies.
Okay, and then usually does that report go to, like, a therapist would go to you and you would evaluate it?
Yeah, so it's different in different places. So so a speech therapist who's working, like, at a hospital, they would be involved in doing that swallow study along with an ENT. They would do it together, typically, along with an x-ray tech. And so they would actually look at it together. It's the doctor who actually does the medical diagnosis, and then the speech therapist would come up with exactly what, you know, what happened in the swallow itself, like at what, you know, which structures were working great, which ones maybe you need to work on. If you need a modified diet, the speech therapist would actually come up with those strategies. So it might be that that speech therapist is the one that you work with. If it's at a hospital, they may do the study and you may work with them or work with them on an outpatient basis. Or if your loved one's, like, at a rehab facility or skilled nursing facility, it may be that the patient gets sent for that study, and then the speech therapist who does the study sends those goals and objectives or what to work on with the speech therapist at the facility. So it might be different people or it could be the same.
Yeah, okay. So if someone from our community wants to get help and you know, mm-hmm. look for a speech therapist, how would they go about doing that? How would they go about getting help?
Right. So there's lots of different ways this can happen. Typically, the typical route is if someone does have a hospital stay because of a pneumonia or some type of precipitating event, you know, an illness or something, you know, a speech therapist can be called in at that time just to do a consult and then decide if they need to do a more thorough evaluation. So lots of times this first contact happens during like an initial hospital stay. And a family member can certainly request during a hospital stay if the doctor hasn't thought of it. You can request it. You can say, you know, I'm getting a little, I've noticed, you know, some communication difficulties or some swallowing difficulties. Is there any way that I can, you know, have a speech therapist come do a consultation? So that's a nice, you know, there's speech therapists there at the hospital. You know, that's certainly something that you can request. If the doctor doesn't request it, you can kind of ask them, can you make this request for me? Otherwise, it can be, a referral can be made from your neurologist. So if you are noticing differences or the neurologist is noticing some changes, they can make that referral. An ENT, if that's a physician that the patient's going to because of swallowing difficulty, they can make a referral. So typically a referral is made from a doctor. And it can happen just a lot of different ways. If you're in a skilled nursing facility, you can request it right there.
Yeah, how I know that this the speech therapist was actually coming to my husband's facility, which mm-hmm. was nice because we didn't have to go
yep.
to a doctor or go to a therapist. They came to us.
Yes. Yeah. And so in facilities, right, and I worked in some skilled nursing facilities when I was practicing, and it was great because we were right there. We saw our patients, you know, every single day, typically for about an hour every day, right alongside the occupational therapist and physical therapist. And sometimes we worked together, which was really nice. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And then it was really great for me because the speech therapist went to the facility, the director, and talked about modifying my husband's diet, which was really
That's
nice
right.
for me.
And
that I kind of, yeah.
Yeah, and we work with the dietitians right there at the facilities. I know my brother has gotten some services in the home, so that can also happen if you're not able to get out. You know, if it's difficult to, you know, for transportation, and sometimes it's, you know, it's just a struggle to do that. So you can have someone come to your home. Speech therapists do that too.
Okay, that's good to know too. And then what about like, is this something that typically you'll find like Medicare and Medicaid and these different insurance, do they pay for these therapies, do you typically find, or do you find that people have to pay out of pocket? Or?
Yeah, so typically they will pay if the speech therapist can, you know, is able to document, you know, specific goals and objectives, and it's, you know, and there's definitely a set time period. Usually, you know, they'll pay for the assessment portion, and then, you know, you have to get approval based on that assessment. You know, and the goal is to, you know, trying to maintain quality of life, you know, and so it may be that a person gets kind of short bursts of speech therapy. It may be a consultation, like for a few sessions to get some things started. If it's communication or cognitive based, if it's swallowing, you may be able to get, you know, several more sessions. So it's really just going to depend on the individual needs and their insurance,
right,
the type
right.
of insurance that they have. You know, I know in
yeah.
the skilled nursing facilities, you know, it's, you know, you really have to document and show the need for it.
Right, right. I would imagine that HD patients probably typically get and have a need for it with what we deal with that for the most part.
Absolutely.
I found it so interesting. Yeah, my husband used to cough all the time, and so they kept going to the doctor, and you know, his neurologist would say, you know, who's been an expert for like 19 years, how we missed this? I don't know. She kept saying, is he choking? And I'd say, no, he's not choking. He's not choking. And then one day I said, you know, it's really weird. He's not choking, but he does this like cough thing every time he drinks and every time he eats. And she's like, okay, I needed to know that, you know? So I think a lot of us that have been experienced this don't realize that cough is very important to recognize.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, and if the absolute, right, and one of the first times that you notice it is with medications. So you start to notice a change in being able to swallow pills, you know, where all of a sudden pills have to be cut up because it's just, you know, the patient's not able to, you know, to get a good swallow. And definitely lots of coughing during the meal is a big red flag. Clearing the throat is another one. So if you're looking for some red flags, coughing, clearing the throat a lot during the meal. If after the person's eating and you kind of, their voice sounds a little wet and gurgly a little, but you know, it sounds like not everything's gone all the way down. That's another red flag. So you can, after someone swallows, you can ask them to, you know, engage them in talking for a minute and hear if it sounds a little bit wet. You can ask them to go ahead and try and swallow again or cough or clear, right, to try and get that. But that's another red flag to watch for. And pneumonia.
Okay.
Any time a person has pneumonia, that's, you really want to make rule out that swallowing wasn't the problem.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's all of our biggest fear in this is the pneumonia and the aspiration. So. Do you have
right and then just one more thing, and then speech therapists are often involved in those decisions when a person can't take food by mouth anymore, you know, when sometimes you're faced kind of with the decision of whether to do a G-tube, you know, to be fed through your stomach if the patient can't eat by mouth anymore. And so the speech therapist is a good person to have a consultation with if you have questions about that.
Yes. Yep. That's. And that's really good because I think a lot of people, you know, you want to talk to your, they talk to the doctors about the G-tube, and we think about weight so much. But that's really mm-hmm. important is that it's also the choking and yeah. So, do you have any at home tips and tricks for caregivers, and patients?
Sure. So I think the biggest, I was trying to write down some things to remember for you, but if we're to stay on the swallowing part of things is just really some safe swallow strategies. And we've talked about these with my brother too, that positioning is really important while someone's eating. And so making sure that the patient or your loved, I keep saying patient because I have my speech therapist hat on, but your loved one is sitting upright. So you don't want the person to be lying back, you know, in bed and eating. You really want them upright. You kind of have to think of, you know, so if you can imagine if you're sitting right now as you're listening to me, you know, that you want everything, you know, when you take a bite of food to go be able to go straight down, right? If you're lying down, it's much more difficult. So that positioning is super important with the head upright. So that's one, taking small bites. So making sure that you're not, you know, that your loved one's not putting lots of, you know, big bites and, you know, and big bites in their mouth and following it with another big bite before they swallow. So small bites, kind of slow it down. You can alternate bites and sips. So taking a bite of food and then a sip of liquid and then a bite of food and a sip of liquid. Try not to rush someone through a meal. So, you know, it may be maybe a change, but really just taking time and, you know, and just making sure that the person's nice and safe with small bites and alternating bites and sips of liquid. The other thing is talking during meals might be a lot to ask to coordinate, you know, both the chewing and swallowing with also trying to pay attention to someone talking and then responding back to them. So just, you know, it's fine to, you know, to socialize during the meal, but, you know, but just make sure that they're done with their swallow before, you know, before talking and expecting a response. So those are some safe swallow strategies that are really helpful. The other thing is sometimes using a straw is not safe because the liquid in a straw goes so fast. And we don't really think about that, but actually just using a cup, you know, cup sips are a little bit better than a straw. A straw tends to make the liquid go down really fast. Okay, so that's for swallowing. Mm-hmm. Do you have any questions about that one? That makes sense?
No, I thought that was really interesting about the talking thing because you know, you don't think about that. We sit and we talk to our loved ones. We want to get as much in with our loved ones when we're with them, right? Let's talk. Let's, like, yeah. Try and, yeah, I've noticed that. I'll talk and my husband just looks at me like, can I eat or can I focus, you know? So that's a really good thing. I never thought, that's the first I've ever heard of that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's important. Hard, but it's, and you want to socialize during the meal, but just kind of be cognizant, right? That give them some time so that they can, you know, go ahead and swallow and then have some time to talk. And, but just know that mealtime is going to take longer and that's okay.
Right.
You know, and for communication, I think, the other one is patience, which is hard. So, you know, try not to talk for your loved one, right? Sometimes it takes them longer to get out what they want to say, or initiation, you know, being able to start talking sometimes can be difficult. So just, you know, try not to speak for them. So, you know, again, conversation, it just may take a little bit longer and just kind of just wait, right? That processing time may be a little bit, may take a little bit longer for the person to process what you've just said. So give them a chance to respond to what you said before saying something else on top of it. Also, avoid giving too many directions at one time. So you may just want to give one or two directions before giving another. And that just follows that same reasoning that if you, you know, put too much, right, it just gets overwhelming or frustrating to the person. Asking yes-no questions are going to be easier than an open-ended question. So, like, if you want to ask somebody, you know, what do you want for dinner? And, you know, and so you ask that question, you know, what would you like for dinner tonight? Well, that's really open-ended, right? So they have to kind of, they have to think about all the things that they want to say. And sometimes word finding is hard, coming up with those words that you know, that you want. And so sometimes doing a yes, no question, like, do you want, would you like to have spaghetti tonight? Right. That can be a yes, no, or you could do two choices. Would you like, spaghetti or hamburgers? Right. It's much easier to answer those than an open-ended question. Also, when someone's tired, it's going to be harder for them to communicate. So maybe lessening the load when someone is tired.
Yeah.
And word finding, right, is I don't know if you've experienced that with your husband, but that's another one that's really hard. It's like that, you know, we all have this. Right? We all experience it where there's a word we want to say and we just can't find it. It's at the tip of our tongue and we can't get it out. And so that's very common. Yeah. And so, you know, encourage other ways to communicate. It can be gesture, showing, drawing, use of picture symbols. So it's okay to find, you know, use as many ways for the person to communicate as you can find. And so encourage them, like, show me, or, you know, can you draw it out for me? Or, you know, maybe you can accept another word for that, something that's a little bit close to it.
Yeah.
I think those are the main, you know, the main ones, trying to lessen that frustration a bit and just being patient. Because, we all want to be, you know, independent and not have, you know, our voice is one of those things that is so important. Our ability to communicate, that's really, you know, that's who we are, right? And so there is a frustration when you can't do that as well as you used to do, or when everybody keeps talking and you can't get out what you want to say as quickly as they are. And so if everybody can just slow it down a little bit and give some time for responses to be there. So.
Right. Yeah. Oh my goodness. It sounds like we're having an interruption here. Can you hear that?
Oh.
It's weird.
No.
I don't know. You can't hear it on your end. That's good.
No.
Are you hearing another voice?
You
no. are?
I'm
okay,
not.
Good.
I don't hear another
I'm
voice.
I'm glad. It's coming in. it's coming in through my thing, which is good.
Okay.
So sometimes the studio gets really kind of weird on us, so I'm glad that it's not coming through on your end.
Okay, good.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming on. And real quick, can you just give us a little overview of how it was in Africa? I'm just kind of curious.
Oh, my goodness. So we went to, it was a group of 15 of us. We went on a Fulbright Hayes grant, which was exciting, to work with children with special needs in Botswana. And as part of the grant, we got to go into different schools all around Botswana and work alongside teachers and students. And we ate traditional food and went to cultural villages. And we went to Victoria Falls and we went on safaris, which was amazing. So we were right with the animals and we actually camped one night and lions were like right behind our tent, which was a little bit scary, but it was amazing. Yeah. So
yeah.
Absolutely.
And I bet
loved
it was
it.
So yeah, I bet it was so life changing working with the people in Africa and doing what you have your doctorate in. I mean, what you're an expert in.
Yeah.
And bringing that must have been a really great experience.
It was, and it was really fun to see our students. Students grew so much, you know, just by going to another country and learning. So,
sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on today.
You're
and
welcome.
Talking to us about this very important topic, and it was so nice to meet you virtually, and we'll keep
you
your brother
too.
In our thoughts. And
thank you.
Yeah, so thank you so much. Just next to let you guys know, next week we will be in Puerto Rico. Help for HD International is hosting a patient education day in partnership with the Foundation of Puerto Rico on the island in San Juan. We're really excited about that. We're really excited to bring as much support to the families of Puerto Rico as we can. Also, next week I will be doing the radio show from Puerto Rico. We are going to be interviewing Leah Barker on her newest article on capturing the corners. And the article is, I Never Thought I would it would get better either. So that'll be a very good show. I'm always really excited when Leah comes on and talks, and her articles are so real and raw, and she's an amazing writer, and so we're excited to talk to her about her newest article next week. Next month's shows are really exciting. We'll have Leah Barker. We're going to do one with the Foundation of Huntington of Puerto Rico and talk about what's going on over there with their foundation. So we have a good lineup next month, so we are excited for that. So I think one thing we learned on this show today is patience, and I think this is something that we have to learn in our whole journey of navigating through HD, is to always be patient with our patients and give them time to talk, because we never know. Something brilliant, I know, is going to come out. And I wish I would have been more patient with my husband when he was able to communicate with me, because it was always so amazing what he had to say. And so patience is important. As always, caregivers, take care of yourself, because without you, who does your loved one have? So always remember self-care. And until next week, everyone have a safe night.
You're looking for meaning and purpose in your work.
Hello?
We all are. Every year, Harvard Business School Executive Education helps executives like you reevaluate goals and develop both personally and professionally to turn their careers into their callings. Don't be different. Be changed. Go. Start by going to hbs.me/go. That's hbs.me/go.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.